closer.
572 Echo Charlie, Shannon, read you 5, Hemi.
5x5, Echo Charlie. And Charlie Charlie is picking up a prayer on that previous frequency.
Say again, you were picking up a what?
A Christian prayer.
You're serious?
Yes, ma'am. Hail Mary.
Okay.
Yes, they didn't like it, did they? They turned up in Peugeots and they went away in ambulances. Oh, my God.
I have watched that that Chris Watts documentary that you were talking about last time we spoke.
Yeah.
God, that is a dark, dark tale, isn't it?
Yes.
Because he doesn't see... It's so bizarre. I mean, yes, she's a bit of a control freak. You can see that and everything, but it's a hard one to... Why would you do... Why the kids?
I know.
Why the kids? If he's... if take her out of the equation if he was that...
Well, they reckon his motivation was...
If she was that awful, but...
Yeah, they reckon his motivation was that he wanted a clean slate to carry on this relationship, but
so strange.
I don't know how he thought he could get away with it. I mean, that is the other thing about it.
But you know,
of course
also,
they're going to come to him.
What's problematic about that, watching that, is he just didn't seem like a sociopath.
No.
And surely, to do what he did, he'd have to be a sociopath. I don't know. I don't get it, because he seemed to show affection to his two little kids. You know, how could you do that? How could you do that?
I don't know.
You know, it's bizarre. Just because he found some new bint that he preferred a bit more to his wife, it just seemed so ludicrous to go to that, you know, putting his own flesh and blood, his own flesh and blood into like a bloody oil tank. For fuck's sake.
And the way he did
grubby
it,
man.
he just suffocated one after the other in front of...
Just horrible.
You know, before I saw that documentary, I just had an image of what Chris Watts must have been like. And it was the complete opposite of what he actually was like. I thought he was probably this bit of a cocky knobhead.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, bit of a bully, bit of a control freak. But he was nothing like that. And I wonder, I think she sort of emasculated him so much that there was all this pent-up rage. I mean, when she sent him that text, something like, find your balls and talk to your mum.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, you do that to any bloke and he's going to enrage him, unless he is actually a spineless, you know, pushover. But she pushed his buttons, I think. And
there's no doubt about that. There's no
doubt.
He
could only take so much.
You know, I have to say, she did seem like a pain in the arse, to be honest.
We're not the only one to say this. If you go on the internet and you look up Shannon Watts, which is a shit name in the first place, there's all sorts of hate for her, if that's the right term.
But it's a difficult thing because that hate has come out of this documentary. This documentary uses real footage. All of it to kind of expose the bizarre strangeness of the whole case. I mean, this was written by a woman and directed by a woman as well, this film. So it's not been done from some kind of a misogynistic point of view. It's not been done from sort of woman-hating point of view. But it has had, to some degree, a reverse effect, because a lot of people, and I should imagine, it's a lot of women have been saying that too. This is what the strange, this is the strange anomaly with these things. It's not always men going online, you know, being a troll online saying terrible things about some poor murdered woman, which is what's happened. She has been a murdered woman. And she was, let's be honest, getting this massive cold shoulder off her husband. The way the texts were, the monosyllabic text back to her, she was saying all this gushing stuff to him and he was just going, okay, you know, like this. And, you know, you've got to try and look at it rationally, whether you like her or not. You watch that and go, yeah, she's not my cup of tea. She'd be a bit of a pain in the neck. But the guy married her. The guy fed her a lot of false beliefs and just went along with it. This is the way I see it. This is my take on it.
Did you not think she used him as a prop, though?
It was I agree.
Just
I agree
all those annoying videos filming everything. Oh, look, the kids have taken a shit again.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's just horrible. I hate that sort of
crafting
on social media. But did go along with it. You know, he's laughing and joking in the video.
Yeah, he went along with it. Yeah, he did. To me, he seemed like he was a very weak, vain man. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what he was ultimately, quietly, we all think of all narcissists as being like Donald Trump or something like that, but they're not. You know, be careful of the quiet man, you know. It's always the fucking quiet ones that are the fucking devious bastards. And the thing is, he's a pure narcissist. You know, he was getting himself beefed up. He was, you know, he was a little bit chubby when he met her. He starts getting beefed up. This girl comes along at work with a big pair of tits and a slightly better figure than his missus. You know what I mean? And he gets taken in with all that. But in reality, I think he was just completely self-obsessed. But to get to that stage where you're that self-obsessed because you want to
just go be with this, another woman.
Yeah. To have this thing where you just absolutely want to start a new life. Like the guy said, why didn't you just get a divorce, mate? Why didn't you just get a divorce? You know, you'd have had a bit of financial difficulty for a few years and it would be a bit upsetting, but...
Well, apparently that was another thing that didn't really come out in the documentary is how much debt they were in. And apparently was responsible for it all.
Well, that's interesting.
She just kept buying shit because she just wanted to portray this image.
Right, that's interesting because you did mention that. You did mention that last time we spoke about it.
Yeah.
And that is not prevalent in the documentary.
No.
That's interesting. That
she
is
was
not...
enough, she ran this... one of these MLM businesses, multi-level marketing.
Yeah.
And she was apparently always spending money on that and it was not really coming to anything. And that he was getting pissed off and she was doing a lot of it behind his back. You know, he'd only find out that she was wasting all their money, you know, when the credit card bill would turn up. You know, and I know I might sound like I'm saying that she deserved it. Obviously, I'm not. But I'm just trying to work out how he got to that point, because I think even with all that, he didn't really seem like he was moving towards killing her. You know, there was no real anger that was displayed by him ever. Buster, did you ever see him at all or hear about him?
No, not at all.
That documentary looked like a really placid person.
That neighbor, the way the neighbor said he's never like this. He's never normally like this. He's never normally animated like this.
Yeah.
So it's like it's almost like he was the shadow in the corner. He was like he was nothing. You know, he didn't really get involved with her mates. She was the voice, the gregarious one. You can see that. It's quite a prevalent.
A lot of insecurity there though with her. I mean, you know, that's what it was, I suppose, it was all about, wasn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's fascinating because it's trying to get delve deeper into what happened, because ultimately it's about killing three people and your own children. That to me is like, I look at him and think, how did you do that, mate? What the hell? And he did speak about it at the end of the documentary. He did say about how he sort of kills her and the girls are up saying what's up with mummy, and he says she's going to be all right and this, that and the other. And it might have just been this moment of utter madness, thinking, well, they'll know I've killed her. They'll always know, even if I get away with it, you know, they'll always hate me for it or something like that, you know. But how could you? Well,
He was talking
about it almost like it was slightly premeditated, like because he took them in the car, didn't he?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It wasn't like, oh, you found the fact that I've killed your mum. Now I'm going to have to up. He calmly put them in the car. He put her dead body at their feet.
In the back. Yeah.
And he drives quite a long way where you'd think if he did have any rage in him, he would have subsided or he would have come to his senses. Exactly. But no, I think he thought, I need to get rid of them as well. I need a fresh start.
Like,
I don't think he had a penny in for a pound. Yeah, but... I don't think he felt emotional when he was killing them. I don't think he, to put it simply, loved them. He couldn't have.
This is the point, because it's just bizarre to think, in for a penny, in for a pound, I'll kill the kids as well. Mm. You know, what we're dealing with then is he's a sociopath.
Yeah.
So everything was absolutely on the surface of any kind of affection or emotion. And in reality, he just didn't have it. He didn't have the full gamut of emotions. He just, to be able to do that, you've got to be, sure, you've got to be. Just really bizarre. Because he didn't seem that kind of person to me. You know?
No, no.
Very strange. Very interesting documentary. Because very interesting because of all the footage, all the real life footage that took place.
And it was only one episode. That was a bonus as well, wasn't it?
I bloody loved that.
Spread over 10 episodes.
Because I watched it on Netflix, Lee. And what a joy to be able to sit and just watch something for an hour and 20 minutes. That's all it lasts, listeners. Yeah. An hour and 27 minutes or something like that.
Not... I thought the way they recreated the text was really good and the Facebook post. I think that... that showed real insight into the story and the characters, not characters, absolutely, but real people, you know, and it told it really well, I thought. But another thing that you might not know of is, you know, you buy like a photo frame and it's got like a picture of a perfect family in it.
Yeah.
You know, with perfect teeth and perfect kids.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not joking. On one, I don't know what it was exactly, but they used a picture of the Watts family in like a photo frame or as an example.
No.
Yeah. until someone pointed it out to them. Where they got that from, well, I don't know how they came across it. Maybe they just searched through Google Images, found that and thought, oh, that'll do.
That's happy. Bloody brilliant. Fascinating.
One thing we didn't mention is that she was pregnant as well with his
Oh yeah, again.
And he always wanted a boy apparently, and they'd named it. I mean, God.
Again, that is thank you, Lee, because that again. So, now he's got these two lovely daughters. He's got a son on the way, you know, and oh my God, it's just weird.
These things do happen, don't they? When usually in a fit of rage where one spouse will kill the other and then take the kids with him, because there's been one recently, hasn't there? Some bloke that killed his wife and kids.
Okay,
I don't really get it
frequently, but like you say, it's usually when it's like that something snaps,
yeah,
you know, and we didn't get that. Now that could well have happened, but we don't get any feeling of that throughout the documentary, so you just kind of feel it was sort of premeditated. That's the problem that it was almost like, I'd want to be with this one here, I've had enough of you and your ways.
So she was away,
so I'll take the kids, including the unborn child and the two girls, I'll just take you out of the equation. It just seems so weird, you know. Very strange.
If only we knew what happened when she came in, because she'd returned from that break at about 2 a.m. and
correct. Fascinating documentary.
I think he attacked her when she was asleep, didn't he, apparently?
Yeah, that's the other thing.
She went to sleep, so it wasn't like they were having a row and then he went for her.
That is so creepy in itself. Yeah. That is fucking creepy. He's just on, right, I'm going
to
kill
her. Want to know what he's... I mean, obviously, if he was planning to do it on that weekend, what was his plan? I mean, did he execute it the way he wanted? You know, was that supposed to happen? That I think possibly he did, because
he took them out to
the place he was working the following day, didn't he?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And he probably was working there, and he was thinking, this is a pretty remote spot. You know, I'm working here on my own a bit. Got them oil tanks. Yeah, so I think he must have been lying in wait for her.
Another interesting thing within that documentary that is a sort of underbelly of it in a way, because of the amount of stuff through Facebook and the amount of like text messaging. It's really about social media as well. And something that struck me as being so weird was that at the start of his interrogation, right, and in numerous occasions when he's being filmed, he's fucking about on his phone. Messaging and saying, this thing that everyone fucking does today. Someone's
checking
talking
in
to him
at the police station.
Checking in at the police station, and he's fucking about on his phone. He was there about to be interviewed, and he's fucking about on his phone, right? Yeah. When they interviewed his girlfriend, who I'm sure she's got some culpability in this, because, oh, she's, you know, going on about his missus. Oh, she's a horror and this, that, and the other, you know.
Yeah, and, I've read some things that, because she claimed to not know he was married or not know. Claimed that
Hogwarts.
She didn't know she was pregnant as well. And I think she's been economical with the truth. But I don't think she was implicit in the murders.
Oh, no, I don't think she was implicit involved at all. But when she was being interviewed by the copper, you watch the footage, she's there fucking about with a phone. Like it's a comfort blanket. Jesus yeah. Christ, what have we become? We've become these adult children constantly pissing about with the phone. Like we've got a dummy hanging out of our mouths.
Yeah.
Oh, what is going on? I know so many very nice people, adults, you know, similar age to me, maybe possibly just a little bit younger than me. And you run into them, you're talking to them, and they're there sort of on the phone.
While they're talking to you.
While they're talking to you. You're watching a football match or something, and they're fucking about on the phone. Yeah, yeah, all right. Yeah, yeah, Dave.
Probably updating the status. Yeah. Just met
Yeah,
Dave.
Yeah.
Not seeing
yeah, exactly. Friends. Yeah, just here with Dave. It's like, fuck off.
I always find that similar
and
thing.
Photographing everything all the yeah. fucking time.
Do you know what I find really creepy, and I would never ever ask somebody for one, is selfies, right?
Oh.
Because I remember Ewan McGregor said this. He says he hates it when people ask for selfies. He said he would much rather have a conversation with them because yeah. they're just used as a prop again, aren't they? It's like being photographed with one of those monkeys in Morocco, you know, one of the funny dancing monkeys. What is the connection there? Is that you're just both looking, you know, usually celebrities looking uncomfortable or forcing a smile.
Yeah.
People just go up to them and go, oh, can I have a selfie? I mean, I can understand it in a way if it's like they go, oh, they have a chat with them and then go, oh, can I just get a selfie before I leave? But it's all about the selfie because they want people. Are they under the illusion that when people see them with a famous person, that, oh, that's their mate. People just think, oh, you bothered him for a selfie.
Yeah, exactly. So when you see somebody, you know, who maybe does it on their profile picture on Facebook yeah. or something, and they're with somebody famous, and that famous person is there with them with a smile on their face, you know that's bullshit. You know it's not a genuine smile. Like, I'm really happy to be with you, somebody I don't fucking know and I don't want to know, because you've mithered me. You know, yeah. it's such bollocks, isn't it?
But it's all about...
I don't blame him if they do the Bob Willis trick. Fuck off! Throw the phone in the air. Smash it out of their hands.
It was some clip of Harrison Ford, wasn't they, being when he was filming Indy 5 in the Northeast, that yeah. these professional autograph hunters were following yeah. him.
Also and, known as cunts.
Yeah, and he basically knew that they kept asking for autographs over and over again. They'd got loads. They always come armed with, like, proper good pictures of Harrison Ford. You know, it's not like, oh, can you just sign the back of this napkin? So what they're trying to do, obviously, is get his autograph and sell the picture on, right?
Yeah.
He has a right go at him, which is really good. You know, saying, I've given you one, you know, stop bothering me. This is my time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm plugging podcasts again tonightly, but I just found this new podcast called The Movies That Make Me. I think it's called The Movies That Make Me. And it's Jonathan Ross being interviewed by Joe Dante, the filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
And some other
Gremlins.
Guy.
Did he do Gremlins, Joe Dante?
He did do Gremlins. You're absolutely right. It was Gremlins, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And this other guy called Josh, I think. He's a screenwriter. But he's always good, Jonathan Ross, especially when he's talking about films, isn't he? He's always good form. And he was telling about, because one of the films he picked was Rocky. The Rocky film is just a brilliant sort of masterpiece of film, you know, raving about it. And he's also raving about one of the Rambo films that he had two illustrious film directors. I think the guy who made Gravity, right? And I think Guillermo del Toro, they were watching it with him because he'd invited them round to his house for dinner.
Mm.
He had this like hot off the press version of this Rambo film that had, it was the one that was infamous for having the most screen deaths, I think.
Is it the Rambo 3?
I think so, yeah. I think it's Rambo. He calls it the penultimate Rambo film.
Oh, well, there's been two more since then, hasn't there?
Right.
It's been Rambo and Last Blood. Rambo, right. Last Blood. Right.
Yeah, it's just, you lose fucking track. Because it's ironic, I was talking with a colleague of mine, Anghara, today about First Blood, saying what a good film the original one is. First Blood is a great film, I think.
Oh, yeah.
But he wasn't talking about the Jonathan Ross. He's really got a punch on for the absolute like ludicrous violence of the Rambo films, because mm-hmm. he likes exploitation films. He thinks of it as just a great exploitation film, you know, or films. And he was saying about this and how by the end of it, Del Toro was really up for watching it from the start. But the other chap was like, you know, I'm not into this kind of thing. But by the end, he was saying, he was going, fucking come on, Rambo. Come on, kill those motherfuckers.
I want to see that now.
Yeah. But
I meant to say, though, you know, when we're talking about the West Memphis 3, that how weird and unwelcoming West Memphis is to outsiders. I was wondering whether that was the town Rambo wandered into and got chased out by Brian Dennehy. Come on, move along now. Don't like your type here. Just wanted to stop for some lunch, a cup of tea. No. But that was based on a book, of course, the first Rambo, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. A really great story.
Great story.
It's about the idea of a Vietnam vet being ostracized from, you know, done all this, like, gone to war, came back to America, treated like shit.
Yep.
So it was easily as good as any of the other films around the time, like Jackknife that De Niro did and things like that, all about sort of the bad treatment of Vietnam vets. But it just happened to be incredibly entertaining too.
That is a good film, Jackknife, yeah.
Great film. There was a lot of films around that time all about the ill treatment of vets, wasn't it? Vietnam vets.
Yeah.
Born on the 4th of July being another one. Mm-hmm. You know, Jackknife. There's various films like that. But I've gone right off the beaten track and forgotten now as to why I was mentioning this particular podcast. And I'm kicking myself now because it was quite relevant to what we were talking about.
But just thinking about Rambo, that was like one of the films that was passed around on a pirate video, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
In school. And it was mind-blowing when you saw it, age 13 or whatever. I think I saw the trailer for Rambo 2. What's it called? What's the second one called? Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Yeah. First Blood, and then because First Blood was just First Blood. It wasn't called Rambo First Blood. I think it is now.
It is, yeah.
It's a bit Raiders, isn't it? It was always now it's Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, to me it's not.
But there was a link there, Dave, that I was going to go into is that I saw that Rambo trailer, the second film, when I went to see Temple of Doom.
Did you really?
And I remember thinking, oh my God, this looks like the best film ever, because the trailer is amazing. And the film's pretty good, obviously.
Yeah,
but in hindsight, it's certainly not as good as First Blood.
They're probably incredibly frowned upon now, most of the Rambo films, because it's all anti sort of... It's usually going after sort of, you know, Eastern types, let's put it that way. You know what I mean?
They were the enemy, weren't they? I get what you're saying, actually, yeah. He's not refighting the war. I mean, the second one he was fighting, he was rescuing people from the Viets.
This is what I mean.
The other one, the recent ones, he's been in Burma, hasn't he? Burma was one, or I don't know what the last one was.
No, I can't remember, but I mean, I think I gave up on the after seeing the second one, you know. But I just think the first film is a great idea. It's about having a fight to survive against your own people because you've been rejected, you've gone out, you've done your service for your country, and then you get treated like shit when you come back, and you're having to literally fight against people in the town because they just don't want you there. It was genius, and it was so. And I remember when it first came out that it was like one of the top 10 films of the year. That's how highly it was rated.
Was it?
It was regarded as one of the top 10 films of the year. You know, so he has his merits, Stallone. He comes up with some great ideas. He's been involved in some great things.
He writes a lot of his own films. I mean, he wrote Rocky,
absolutely.
And he directs a lot of his films. Did he direct Rambo, the first one?
He didn't. No, no.
Well, it was Ted Kotcheff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think he's not necessarily... Some of his scripts, they get a bit ropey, don't they? I think in Rambo. Yeah.
But the original Rocky, even if the only thing he ever did was the original Rocky, that is Ross makes a great point. He said it's a great film, and it was wanted. It was a very hot script that he'd written.
Yeah,
and lots of people wanted to make it in Hollywood. They loved it, but he held out because he said, "No, I want to play Rocky Balboa. I am Rocky Balboa. Mm. Trust me." Mm. And like Ross says, you can't imagine that. You cannot imagine that role with any other actor.
No.
You look back and I think that he actually owned that character. In fact, I remember when I saw it as a kid and the pictures, didn't know who he was. I thought it was so naturalistic the way he acted it because he's so weird. His performance is quite weird. Mm-hmm. Think about it. The way he talks, the way he is, you know, he's kind of.
Yeah.
It's almost really like a simpleton. It was quite almost like a documentary. Credit to John G. Alverson, who did it as well. You know, it was really, really good, quite slow.
I just loved those Rocky films growing up. I mean, the one I got, I mean, I didn't see the first two at the pictures or anything, but I remember the excitement of going to see Rocky III. Honestly, I couldn't hardly contain my excitement. You know, I just wanted to see this film so badly.
So exciting, Rocky III, wasn't it?
And it is a fantastic film. The adrenaline rush you got from a Rocky film.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Mr. T as Clubber Lang.
Mr. T. And the fourth one as well, which I absolutely love.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the fourth one being in the pictures in Alti. And when he knocks Dolph Lundgren out,
yeah,
right, in the end, everyone fucking jumped up and cheered in the pictures. Everybody, you know, it was like, he's got the Russian.
Yeah.
Well, I was taken to the pictures by the family called the Kellys that we were quite friendly with in Sale. Went to the big picture house in Sale. Sale Cinema was an unbelievable kind of auditorium, massive, one screen only.
Uh-huh.
And to see that film there was brilliant. You know, it was very exciting. Even though you look back at it now, it's quite a slow film. But what really gripped me and I think my brothers, it is one of these... Like, in a way, Raiders, one of these films that's really stuck in my mind, going to see it in the pictures and being really taken with it. The difference there, though, was I didn't know anything about it. So it was very exciting to see this film about this guy who suddenly starts training, gets the opportunity, and then he goes into the big bout at the end and he's the hero. You know, very simple idea, really, but it was so well done. Those training sequences,
yeah,
I remember them so vividly, watching them at the pictures, with that music, and it'd be so motivating, you know.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Did the Rocky films give birth to the montage, you think?
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
I love the training montages.
Yes, I think that's really, without doubt. I mean, it's all cliched now. It's all comedy now, isn't it? But
yeah,
that was such a genius idea. But you know what? Genius, because that montage scene is still the best. All the spoofs that get done and all the and there's other films that use montage.
Rocky III?
Still the best. Well, I'd still say the original one.
Did he have a montage in the original?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Where he's starting to run and he's starting to get fitter, you know, and he catches the chicken in the yard and,
yeah,
come on, Rocky, Rocky. You know, Burgess Meredith shouting at him. And then there's a great bit in it where he starts sprinting and the camera follows him and he's sprinting and he's just getting faster and faster and he's really fucking pegging it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, this guy can really run. You know, he's fucking hell. And he's,
yeah.
And then you've got that fantastic Bill Conti music in the background.
Yeah.
You know, you can fly now, let him fly now. And it's like, whoa. It was like, not seen anything like this before. This is amazing.
He knew how to give you the feel good factor.
Yeah. You know? It's a combination, isn't it, in films? It's the shark, but you need the... Rocky needed Bill Conti's amazing score, you know,
mm-hmm.
that didn't even get nominated for an Oscar. What? Didn't even get nominated.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. It Only Let It Fly got was nominated as best song. Didn't even win. Didn't even win that fucking amazing score for Rocky.
I suppose it might have been a surprise that Rocky did win the best picture. I can't remember what it was up against at that time. Was it Network and things like that? But
yeah, I mean, there's some good
films. I was so pleased when I find out it won Rocky because, you know, I never knew that for ages.
Yeah, it won, and Stallone won Best Script, I think.
Yeah.
He was nominated for Best Actor, and Alverson won for Best Director. But it was Conti who was robbed because the music in that is phenomenal, isn't it? You know, it is phenomenal. It really sort of makes the film. And then, of course, that iconic bit at the end of the montage of the first film is when he runs up the steps in Philadelphia and then pounds the sky, knowing that he's fit, knowing that he's prepared, knowing that he's ready. You know, oh, it's wonderful stuff. In fact, that was probably the highlight of the film, even more than the fight, you know. Very good.
He loses the fight, doesn't he, in the first one?
Yeah.
Does he lose it or does he draw it?
No, he loses it. He loses it, I think. And the bit that's great, of course, is the sort of embrace at the end. And Apollo Creed goes, "Ain't going to be no rematch. Ain't going to be no rematch."
Don't want one.
Exactly. Great. It's perfect.
I think what he was great at, Stallone, in his writing, and this came through in Rocky III, was he would give you a reason to really hate his opponent. You know, Clubber Lang, Mr. T, was an absolute arsehole, right? He beat Rocky in the first one, but then they had the second match, and Clubber Lang's like coming out being the big I am, and he accidentally pushes Mickey over, doesn't he? His trainer. And Mickey dies before the fight. Or, is that the one where he wins, or does he lose that one?
And I think he wins. He does. He wins. He beats Clubber Lang.
He wins in the end. Is like, does he lose?
Clubber Lang seems to be invincible.
I think it's the first fight. Mickey dies before the fight, and Rocky's obviously not on his game because Mickey's dead.
Oh yes, that's right. He does. He beats him in the first fight, and then he has a rematch.
And then he's down, and he wants to give up boxing, and he's finished. But Apollo gets him going again.
That's the beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, Apollo just turns up, doesn't he?
Yeah,
you see,
come on, Stallion.
Clips that Apollo hates Clubber Lang from a distance. You know, Apollo's long retired, but he's a chump. He's not a worthy champion. You know, he's got no respect, so he wants to see someone kick his ass. So he ends up trading Rocky.
Oh, it's great.
Clubber Lang gives a bit of gob to Apollo, doesn't he? Calls him a has-been or something like that.
What are you looking at, chump? T's brilliant in that. Mr. T's brilliant in Rocky III. Because you really hate him. He's such a cunt. And you hate him. And it's great. Great
fun. So satisfying when he just absolutely gets leathered. Rocky IV again, you know, similar story. And what's the tragedy in that? There's some reason why.
There's always something in there. There's always
something, the motivating factor.
Yeah,
he killed, of course.
Is, so formulaic, aren't they?
Drago kills Apollo, doesn't he?
That's it.
Yeah,
that's it. Apollo Creed gets literally murdered in the ring by Drago.
Yeah, it's like an exhibition match, isn't it? And Apollo comes out to Living in America, and James Brown's there. It's this big entrance. Living in America. It's amazing. He's not taking it seriously at all. And then he just gets absolutely battered one end of the ring to the other.
It's such brilliant. But
that was a great plot device, that.
Yeah.
Murdering Apollo.
Yeah, yeah. The great thing what he's done, he's realised that all the sequels, there's just a bit of a tweak. Okay, on this one, Apollo gets killed. On this one, but it's the same plot, like, really. It's so formulaic.
Yeah.
It's brilliantly formulaic. And we as punters, we got sucked into it.
Because there was a bit of, I don't know when Rocky V came out, probably, was it early 90s or possibly late 80s? I remember the rumours were all like, it's Rocky's son. It's Rocky's son, Rocky, but Rocky's son turned out to be a bit of a wimp, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So I wasn't interested in boxing. And it's the story of Tommy Gunn, isn't it?
Yeah,
the,
Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson was a real...
He was a real proper fighter.
Actually the nephew of John Wayne.
Was it?
An amazing story. But, yeah. And, of course, John Wayne's real name was Marion Morrison. Marion Mitchell Morrison. Tommy Morrison. And there's a very good documentary about Tommy Morrison you can watch on YouTube. It's quite interesting. Get the chance. Yeah. It's fascinating.
But that sort of lets the franchise down, that one, I thought. I didn't think that was great.
I've only seen bits of it. I've not seen... I'll be honest with you, after Rocky IV, kind of gave up the ghost on it. And I haven't even seen Creed, really, which, you know, again...
I've seen Creed. It's not bad, but
great quiz question there. Of course, is, you know, who's been nominated twice for best actor, best supporting actor, but didn't win, and that would be Sylvester Stallone playing Rocky Balboa. It's been quite a few times that people have been nominated. I think I'm right in saying Al Pacino's been nominated. I'm not sure he was nominated for The Godfather. First time round, but certainly the second time round. But it's one of those quirky questions because...
Well, didn't he win it for Scent of a Woman? Al Pacino.
He won it for Scent of a Woman. He was nominated for Godfather Part 2 as Best Actor, but he never won it, did he? He never won it.
He should have been nominated for Cruising.
Oh, without doubt. Without doubt.
Still need to see that. Yeah. Cruising.
Very. I think it's dark. Caused a lot of controversy, especially with the gay community, because it exposed some the idea of sort of like very brutal S&M sex and all that. But now Friedkin again doing dark shit, man. Friedkin, we need to do a podcast on Friedkin. We've got to do a podcast on Friedkin, man.
Yeah,
without doubt.
Friedkin.
I just want to say with Stallone as well, I am quite a big fan of the excellent, and it's quite a little film really, but the excellent Copland. I think he's really good in that.
That's a great little film.
Ray Liotta's excellent in it. It's sort of his mate, but he's...
I bet Ed, what's his face, is in it? Ed Harris.
Ed Harris is in it,
always in things like that.
Robert De Niro's in it. Harvey Keitel is the real bastard in it.
Mm.
De Niro's like the
James Mangold, Dave.
James Mangold, yeah, that's
right. Doing
the new indie film, yeah. Yeah, big name in Hollywood. Keitel plays the real bastard in that. And it's De Niro, actually, who plays the...
good guy.
The internal affairs copper, trying to bring these coppers who are out of hand to book, really. Very relevant to today. Very relevant to what's happening in the British police force, who seem to think they're a bloody law unto themselves. And kind of interesting. So the idea of Copland, you know, they've created this great little world, but they think they're untouchable. Yeah, it's a good film, that. Really good film.
Yeah.
And Stallone plays against type. To begin with, he's very sort of affable. He plays kind of like Rocky Balboa, a little bit pushed around.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, yeah.
You know, big sort of lumbering giant, bit of a gentle giant, comes across as a bit of a twit, but he's not at all. Bit naive, but actually, underneath it all, he's not really. Yeah, it's good. Underrated, you know.
Of course. He was in Escape to Victory, wasn't he? As the goalie.
Escape to Victory. What a marvellously strange film that is. I love it.
Yeah.
It was on the other week, and I actually watched the last 20 minutes of it. Made George watch it with me and say, look at this. Watch how when they escape through the stadium at the end, look at all the flares.
Probably footage from Sunderland versus Arsenal or something like that, wasn't it?
Just an amazing cast as well, you know, like Michael Caine, Max von Sydow, as the German who wants
the nice Nazi.
Yeah, as the nice Nazi,
wasn't it?
Who wants to get the game between the POWs and the Reich and. Pele. I mean, like, that would happen. Like, he'd even be in a POW camp. I'm sorry.
What the fuck? Yeah.
A black fella. Come on.
Fair enough, yeah.
He'd be in with the gypsies and the Jews in the fucking concentration camp. It wouldn't happen, would it? No. Such a fantasy. You've got John Walker and Russell Osman.
Tim Piggott Smith.
Tim Piggott Smith's in it, that's right. Yeah. And Ozzy Ardiles.
Ozzy.
Who does some good skills.
Yeah. Fantastic. Mike Summerby.
Mike Summerby, of course. Mike Summerby. Yeah. And of course, Bobby Moore. Summerby and Moore have a bit of a speaking part along with Pelé.
Yeah, well, I think I do remember Mike Summerby being pretty decent in that, to be honest. I remember the bit where he doesn't have much to say, but it's half time. And that's when they were going to skate, weren't they? But it was like 4-0? Or four, yeah. It was 4-1. It was 4-1 up to the Germans at half time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they start trying to persuade Michael Caine that they want to carry on the match.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like Pelé does it in his bad acting. He goes, we can do this, Hutch. We can do this.
Yeah. And Mike Summerby goes, yeah, it's not like we're being slaughtered, boss. It's like, 4-1.
It's 4-1. Yeah, we can do this. We can do this. So I went a bit Tony Curtis what? Then.
You really think so? You really think so?
You telling me you want to go in there and finish the game?
Yeah, we can do this, boss.
The whole plan was to just pretend to play so we could escape at half time.
Yeah, fuck that. We're going to escape, for fuck's sake.
Who cares?
What's absolutely fabulous about that film as well, it was directed by John Huston.
Yeah.
John Huston directed that film. The man who made The Maltese Falcon, Treasure of Sierra Madre. You know, this is the great Hollywood legend. Well.
Oh, no, that was Polanski. He was in Chinatown. Yeah, yeah.
He's brilliant as an actor in Chinatown. Mm. As the real horrible baddie who's, Huston's character in Chinatown. Of course, fucks Faye Dunaway, who's his daughter, and has a child with her, a bit sort of Fred West-like.
Kevin Beattie, of course. Yeah, there was a few Ipswich players, weren't they? Paul Cooper, John Walk,
Russell Osman. But someone's missing from that Ipswich lineup of that time.
Oh,
who
no.
could that possibly be?
Oh, God.
Who did he not choose to be in Escape to Victory? I wonder who it was.
Who did this reject out of hand?
Who did he
We're not having him.
A man
Look at his
whose
hair.
Face is the colour of the sun and his head is as big as a melon. Who could it be?
Oh, come on. Fucker. I think you're being a bit harsh there, Dave.
I was asked to be in it, but I couldn't be bothered. I was on a jolly, having plenty of bobbly.
It's only 8 years old.
Ray Parler on a pedal-up. We're on a pedal-up.
But he could drink me under the table even then.
But
I found this
picture,
Dave. I think I did tweet it on the Something Wicked tweet. It was a golf charity day with Ali McCoist, Alan Brazil, and Parles, Ray Parler.
I've seen,
and I thought something like, my God, just imagine the banter. Just would be horrible.
Just horrible.
You
just
can funny. Imagine them putting each other off. Come on, like, Alan, hit the ball, you fat bastard.
It would just be like a bunch of sex pests as well, wouldn't it? Imagine. Hey, give her one. Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that like he's even been able to have an erection in the last 5 years? The amount of fuck booze.
Yeah, they were probably playing against Andy Gray and Richard Keys.
They're the dirtiest bastards in football. Mind you, of course, I wouldn't imagine Brazil's seen his penis in about 20 years.
Probably has to use a mirror on a stick.
Exactly. Sticks a mirror on the floor, doesn't he?
What?
They're like a little bulb in it, like they're like a little fucking bulb. Oh, gee,
God, I can't believe we're talking about Alan Brazil's cock.
We've had this wonderful conversation about Sylvester Stallone's career, and it's come back round to Alan Brazil's cock.
He's a walking miracle. He's a modern medical miracle in Brazil. How is he still alive?
All these poor fucking people that died of COVID and Brazil's still here.
I mean, every picture you see of him, he looks like he's going to burst, doesn't it? He's so red. It's like, are you feeling all right, Alan?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm a bit warm, you know, and I've got a bit of a shooting pain up my arm, but, yeah, I'm champion.
His heart must be the size of a bull. He's so swollen, so engorged.
God, imagine his
liver, Jesus
Christ. I bet there's not a blood pressure tester that can live with him. Can he probably break every single one? Blows off his arm.
Yeah, blows off his arm. It just rips, shreds. You know?
Did he have some sort of heart scare in the last week or something?
Well, why hasn't that happened years ago?
Well, this is it. I was on this death list forum, which is a bit like Deadpool.
Who you put on the list next, you know?
Well, Brazil
must be top of the list.
Yeah, well, Brazil is been nominated a few times, and someone's put, I've mentioned him a few times here. This is his photo from his radio show the other day. Has he now beaten Jim Neidhart, don't know who he is, to the record of the man with the highest blood pressure in history? This picture of Brazil looking extremely red, like roasted gammon. Right. He's so fucking red. It's unbelievable.
He is a horrible red, belligerent Tory. Fuck. He doesn't care about anything but consumerism. Yeah. Consuming as much as he can. That's been his entire life after football, hasn't it? I got a bit of money. So I'm going to drink some bubbly and eat Chateaubriand. And, you know, just constantly drinking and shitting all day. He's a fucking wretch, isn't he? He's a wretch.
But it does beg the question, how has he not died?
I mean, how has he not died?
He's had, I imagine, several heart attacks.
He's probably not noticed them because it's
strokes.
All happened. Well, the heart attacks have happened so deep under the flab that the rest of his body have only felt it as murmurs, you know, even though his brain, something's gone in his brain a little bit. But his arteries are so hardened. It's taking such a long time for it to go through the rest of his system. Yeah. He's horrible, isn't he?
Someone's put here. Having said that, I'm quite jealous of the fat fucker. To be fair, his job is going to all the greatest sporting events and getting paid to get pissed as a fart.
Well, that's
who wouldn't want to live like Brazil does?
But it's just a constant walking stereotype. Oh, wow. And everyone goes, oh, wow, what did you get up to last night? I got a bit of shit faced. Oh, yeah, bribed a cop.
With Ray Parler.
I attempted to rape a barmaid and tried to bribe her off with some cash and some bobbly.
With
me and Mike Barry.
They do a podcast together, you know.
Oh, God, they don't. I may actually have to listen to that a little bit. And I'll probably be just annoyed and disgusted because it'll be just so pro-Brexit, pro-Tory.
Yeah, well,
send them all back, the bastards.
The reason I got reminded of Brazil again was I was in the works the other day and I saw his latest book has been discounted yet again from... Starting off at £20, it's now £3.50. Right. But it's still not worth that, is it?
No.
And I was reading some of the reviews on Amazon. They're all saying it's just utterly shit and tedious. It's just about Brazil going to a sporting event getting pissed. That's it.
Well, when I left the bookies at 2:30 in the afternoon, I was straight down to Lingfield Park for more bobbly. I put all the rest of my money on a wee nag that came in third. But yeah. I had an each-way bet, so I got my money back. I mean, this was like just boring anecdotes about gambling, drinking, sweating, eating, and shitting.
Yeah, pretty much. Though apparently he does go into his political views in this book. He admits he is a Tory.
Of course he is.
But he's a caring Tory, Dave. That's what.
Oh, he's a caring Tory. What does that mean?
I don't know. It's an oxymoron.
It is an oxymoron. Is that possible?
Yeah.
You know, it's disgraceful to be Scottish and a Tory. I mean, it's even worse than being Welsh and a Tory. It's just disgusting. It's a disgrace.
Oh, there's some quite, it's descended into quite a funny conversation here. It's gone into random uses for Alan Bazile between talk sports shows. Stick him up against the bedroom wall as a standing storage heater.
Imagine the energy you'd get off him.
Yeah.
When he's dead, they should slow burn him. And you'd probably be at a, like most of the houses in Dundee for like, you know what I mean? The energy that come off him.
Off his fat.
Off his fat, exactly.
Emergency cover for any defective red traffic light. And a ready reckoner colour chart for use whenever fire engines are being painted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Someone's just put a picture of Alan Bazile looking very red and bloated. Just put, here's Alan Bazile about to blow up. Because he always looks like he's one pinprick away from exploding, doesn't he?
If I had, like, you know, if I was one of these super rich people, because he loves money so much and because he's such a greedy, fat, pig at the trough, Tory, capitalist pig. I said pig twice, but he deserves it. In fact, three times. Pig, right? If I had a load of money, what I would do is I'd say there's £1 million in a suitcase. And all you have to do, Alan, for that £1 million, is I want you to run 100 metres as fast as you can. But we're going to film you from all different angles doing it. And you can only wear a pair of, like, Speedo swimming trunks doing it. Okay? Because what I want is, you've got to try. If you don't try your hardest to run that 100 metres, you don't get it. But there it is. Okay? There it is. It's there for you. As long as you get your pull. And I just want to see what he looks like. Panting and sweating and, you know, absolutely at near death, just as he gets to the end of that 100 meter, and just as he's about to grab the suitcase, it's like on, it's on like electric wheels, and it goes another 100 meters ahead in front of him. So he has to carry on chasing it. Keep running, Alan. Keep running.
It'd be better to put him on a treadmill with no off switch, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just see him run himself to death.
Not to run on a treadmill for 35 minutes. Before he gets the money. And if he does that, the money will come floating down from above. But he has to keep up a steady pace. He can't drop below a certain speed. A bit like the film Speed. He's got to jog at, say, 8 or 9 miles an hour, which is, that's some going. You know what I mean? Especially for a real fat fuck like that. And watch him. Watch Brazil sweat to his death.
Someone's put here.
And what we do is, we keep, as he's doing it, we keep just setting the clock back a little bit. The digital clock says, hang on a minute, that's it, 34 minutes. It's gone back to 33 minutes.
Chucking fruit pastels at him. Do you remember the fruit pastel controversy?
Have a fruit pastel, you fat cunt. Have another one.
Oh, he won't eat them, though. He's boycotting them since they've gone vegan. Did you know that?
Say that again. I can't believe this.
He's boycotted fruit pastels since they went vegan.
Who's gone vegan? Brazil's not gone vegan.
No, fruit pastels have gone.
Oh, he's boycotted them because they are vegan now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it,
Dave. Listen to this.
You know, fruit pastels, the recipe to appease, wait for vegans.
So what are you wrong with these people?
Are you a fruit pastel man now?
Yes.
Oh. I will not be now.
What would you like better? Now.
If they don't like it, don't eat it. What's wrong with it?
I mean, what does he expect from his fruit pastel to taste like venison?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they've taken out some ingredient that is a derivative of meat or something. It's not like he can taste it.
All the skinny vegans just throw the same line back to him. If you don't like it, don't eat it, you fat fucker.
I can't believe he's a fruit pastels man. He's in his 60s. What bloke in his 60s eats fruit pastels?
He's probably just about three like packets him. A day. Like maybe a couple of fruit pastels. Like, I wouldn't mind a fruit pastel. Thanks very much, son. That's very kind of you. Let me have one of your fruit pastels. Yeah. But not scoffing your face, just pushing them in your fat mouth, hour after hour, slobbering. Oh God!
What a Describing himself as a fruit pastel man. I was a fruit pastel man, but I will not be now. I won't have any now.
Fucking Jabba the Jock. I can't fucking be doing with this.
Someone's put here, Dave, I'd never heard of this guy. The fat fuck used to be a footballer.
How is it? How is it that the svelte Paul Mariner dies, right?
Yeah.
And this cunt is still here. You know, this weeble wobbling all over the place like a
He's a miracle.
He is a miracle. He's a space hopper, isn't he? Yeah. He's just all face with feet.
He's a bit like Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Big round ball.
Having it. Give it to me. It's mine. Give me that chocolate ball, Wonka.
Alan Brazil in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That'd
I'm
going to
suck all the chocolate out of the river of chocolate. Give it to me, Wonka. I'm doing a sketch of him here, but I don't think I've done his face fat enough. As we're talking, I'm drawing him.
I'd love to see that.
In my mind, I'm doing like a mind's eye version of Alan Brazil. But
wow,
it's quite good, actually. I've given him really small eyes, dead close together, a little nose and little mouth, and just like a massive face, you know, and then dead high hair, dead high curly hair. He always had that when he was a player.
He did.
Like, very weird high perm hair right at the top.
Yeah.
And he was a shady, shifty fucking player as well, wasn't he? They're like, ducking in for a goal here, and, you know, just there's something snide about him. There always has been. Just snide bastard.
I mean, he made his name at Ipswich, didn't he? But then he moved to United and Spurs, and don't think they think of him very fondly. He's a bit of a flop.
But he was out all the time, like down the bookies, like going with prozzies.
And I saw that bit, Dave. You know, you told me years ago of him talking, because it's on YouTube, of where he's talking about Bob Monkhouse.
Oh, God, it's so cringe.
How is Bob's health?
God, it's so cringe. And
basically, what the clip is that someone's playing that back to him, right?
Yes, exactly.
And I think Mike Parry's there. And Alan comes up with this shit excuse like, yeah, well, I only said that because I heard two versions. What, one that he was alive and one that he was dead? So what? Wouldn't you check out which one was right?
I don't know quite what you believe these days, do you?
Two versions?
How is Bob's health these days? Oh, my God. What an
ignorant kid.
There's no fucking research, is there? He doesn't know what know who he is.
I don't even know the football results.
He doesn't know fuck all, does he? He's not interested.
Do you think, Watford will stay up this year? They were relegated last year. They're not even in the Premiership, Alan. I heard two versions. I thought they'd appealed.
Morning, Gary.
Hello, I'm still here.
Good. Hi, Gary. We're here as well.
Yeah. I feel a bit of a fraud today.
Why?
Because I wasn't watching any TV last night. I was at the filming of the BAFTA tribute for Bob Monkhouse over at the BBC.
Is that right? But that was a bit of fun.
Oh, man, there were some really nice contributions from a lot of good people, including some of the best of the younger comics around now. You like Jack D, Jimmy Carr, Steve Coogan.
Yeah.
And the clips were absolutely sensational. They got all his greatest one-liners, his acting roles. Nostalgia by the bucket. I mean, you forget he was in things like Carry On Sergeant
many people, Gary, forget that he's one of the greatest stand-up comics you've ever seen. I saw him years ago when I was still a reporter in Chester, and at the time we only knew him as the host of the Golden Shot or whatever, you know?
I tell you what, he's got a great, you know, if he has to, he can do a blue version as well, which is meant to be fantastic.
Oh, yes, in fact, you can get those on video still, on DVD probably now. This show goes out the weekend after next on BBC One. You're absolutely right. You're left with no doubt that Monkhouse was a giant.
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely.
Gary, what about Bob's health now?
He died at Christmas.
I think Mr. Brazil was just looking a little bit back there rather than forward. Well,
I heard two different versions of it, to be honest.
The terrible thing
two
was
different
that
versions,
they
I was told.
Do this tribute.
We hope his wife adds a bit of extra salt into his meal every evening. Try and finish him off. Yeah, that's the way to take care of a big slug.
Isn't it? Leave some salt.
Get him with salt.
And no doubt there's been many a night where he's been actually like asleep on the doorstep as well, a bit like a slug. Next time he can't get in his house because he's so pissed and he falls asleep in his fucking porch. That's a really gaudy porch as well, like some kind of Roman bloody
hallway.
With pillars and stuff, and horrible white pillars, and disgusting house, like mock Tudor bullshit house with like fucking fake bloody Roman pillars at the front. You can just imagine it, can't you? Ridiculous fucking doorbell which plays, I don't know, Flower of Scotland or something like that on it. And you know,
maybe the pillars could be two massive fruit pastel tubes.
Yeah,
he probably sledgehammered them down now.
His doorbell probably plays Should Have Known Better by Jim Diamond, something like that. And he's there on the floor, fast asleep, with the fucking gut hanging out of his unironed shirt. You ever seen that picture of him? And he's got this shirt that's the most disgustingly unironed shirt you've ever seen in your life. Going rolling in work with his flab hanging out of it, all unbuttoned. And that time he was telling that copper, out of a drink driving. Oh, what a cringy, pathetic, whining creep he was there.
I love you guys. I support you guys.
I love the law. Yeah, but there he was. So he's there fast asleep on the bloody doorstep and his wife just puts all the salt there, just where he's slavering. Just rubs it in his mouth. Rubs it all around his mouth. Like that. And then she just pours a load right into his mouth and starts coughing and spluttering. Fucking hate him.
I was reading an interview with him and he was talking about how a lot of his mates have been killed by booze, right?
Right.
So but he says, I like a drink, but I know my limit. And I was thinking,
what is his limit?
Know your limit when you were caught drink driving about three times.
Exactly. Knows his fucking limit. He's always leathered. He's always off work. He always makes some pathetic excuse why he can't go to work. Or didn't he have COVID? The back end of COVID, and he was in there with Ali McCoy's.
What? He survived COVID. He's like, probably one of the most vulnerable people on the planet, given how fat he is.
I was just so offended by that. I was so offended that he survived COVID. All these people like working in hospitals and stuff that have suffered, died from COVID. Alan Brazil survives. He goes, oh, it's shocking. I felt shocking. I'll tell you, oh, it's terrible. This is after his jabs as well. You know, he'd been jabbed up. He probably had about four jabs. Oh, don't let it get me. I want to get out there. I want to get out there down to the race course.
Probably need an extra long needle to get through all the flab.
Yeah, well, that's it. It hadn't actually got into his body, had it? The COVID. The needle
just
bent
in the fat.
Yeah, just got like a little pool of like COVID jab in his flab, you know? Stuck in it. Like an air bubble in his skin.
Slow release.
Yeah. Dripping in very slowly into his, God, horrible, great lump of turd.
I think someone said, when he dies, they should use his heart to provide electricity to Africa.
That's it, isn't it? Exactly. I mean, if
Africa.
Surely there'd be a system of it to burn him over a period of time, and it would really provide a lot of power somewhere. Like work a water mill or something in Africa, like you say, you know, like,
right, Dave, very enjoyable.
Highly enjoyable. But yeah, he's still here, guys. What can you do? Yeah. You know, yes. You can't even protest for his demise, can you? You know, it's something, you know, you go Johnson out, you know, nobody, you can't say Brazil to die. Jabber the jock to be a deceased. So annoying, isn't it?
Someone sent me a link for this fucking podcast. These two what would he call us? Two losers.
Two losers. Yeah, two lefty losers.
Kept calling me a fat cunt.
That capitalist pig.
I'll be getting my lawyers on to you guys. Don't you worry about that.
All right, take us to court and see if there's anything that we said is not true.
No, exactly. No slander. Well, I can only conclude that the defendants were correct in their assumption that Alan Brazil is a fat cunt.
This is it.
Never before me have I ever witnessed such a fat fuck as you, Brazil. I find you in contempt of court.
The very fact that you've brought this to the courts is shameful. And as you are a fat and lazy Tory cunt, I find you contempt.
I love you guys. I support the judiciary. I can't believe this.
I'm not believing that, Mr. Brazil. We're going to send you to prison for 3 years. No, no. You can't do that. What about me fruit pastels?
So, and you will only be able to live on a diet of water and salt and vegan fruit pastels.
There's Mike Parry crying, no, Alan!
Can I still be my show? He could still bloody broadcast from prison, though, couldn't he?
Hello, welcome to Talksport Breakfast with me, Alan Brazil, here in Broadmoor.
He wouldn't have very interesting anecdotes then. It's Cheltenham this week, and I'm not able to go.
It was very funny this morning. Charlie Bronson tried to stab me in my tit.
We got Ray Parler on the line, though. He went to Cheltenham.
Hi, Ray Parler. Hey, Ray. Oh, Ellen, you all right there in Broadmoor? Not too bad, not too bad. Had a few stitches for the stabbing off Charles Bronson in the tit, but I believe your horse came in. Ha ha, great news. Yeah, poor tip on for you, Al.
That's a good Ray Parler that day. Romford, what does he call him? Romford Pelé.
Romford
Pelé. I can't believe Ray Parler is, you know, he's always called a legend. He was a mediocre player, wasn't he? Oh, Ray Parler.
What did he do?
Wasn't even in the first team half the time.
Well, that's been a fantastic diversions. Yeah. But I still can't remember why I mentioned that podcast with Jonathan Ross. But it's a good podcast. If you get a chance to listen to it, it's very interesting.
What's it called again?
I think it's called The Movies That Make Me or something along those lines. And they've got lots of different guests on there to like... It's very random, you know, like the E Street Band with Steve Van Zandt as well. I noticed Edgar Wright does his, John Landis does his, lots of people in showbiz just talking about the films that meant a lot to them. And Ross is good because
idea,
he's in
that. Like that.
Oh, it's a great idea. It's really nice pitch of a podcast, and it's really good. Ross is a great talker, isn't he? So
he's also
he's the guest.
He's the guest, right.
So he's the guest, which is great, because he's got, like, fantastically random and diverse film choice, because he loves, like, loads of beach movie stuff. He loves... he picked a Hitchcock film, and he picked Frenzy, you know. Didn't pick any of the classic. He picked Frenzy, which I thought was great, because Frenzy set in London in the 70s, so it reminded him as a kid, and he said it's, like, it's kind of sleazy.
I remember seeing that one Sunday night, and when he...
It's a fucking Fred, great film, isn't
what's
it?
What's the guy called in it? Fred? Is it Freddy someone?
It's Foster.
Barry Foster.
Barry
Foster. When he strangles the
and
woman.
John Finch does it as well.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's horrible, that, though, when he strangles her.
It's the bit where he strangles her, and then he was talking about the shot where it pans out down the stairs and then into the street, like, just showing normality from this, what's happening in this room, in this building. But this woman's been strangled to death. I think genius idea, you know, brilliantly done. You know what? They were all saying that it's a really underrated Hitchcock film. It's sort of been forgotten, and it's a great film because it's un-Hitchcock in a way, because it's a bit sleazier.
Yes.
It's got a bit swearing in it. Shows a bit of tit, you know, things that wouldn't happen normally in a Hitchcock film. It's a bit grittier, but actually it's a proper good little, nasty little film. Yeah, so great choice that, I thought, Jonathan Ross. Talks about a lot of sort of like exploitation films and what have you. You know, it's interesting, very interesting.
He's a massive Jackie Chan fan as well, isn't he? I remember, I don't say he introduced me to Jackie Chan, but he's done a few things with Jackie Chan, hasn't he? Like documentaries.
Absolutely.
He's certainly championed his films and got them more well known.
I think he's a great sort of pop culture champion, isn't he? And he champions... quirky things as well, so he's probably as influential as Mark Kermode, really, in that respect. You know, you have to give him credit for that, and he's just a big fan. I think he's very happy nowadays, you know, more than anything else, just being a massive kind of nerdy movie fan, which is, to be honest, what, you know, and pop culture fan, which is what we are, which is great, you know. And I love people who embrace that.
Do you think you're going to see the new Exorcist film, Dave?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Anticipating it with some trepidation.
Trepidation is for sure.
Is it a trilogy? I've heard.
Just always worries me, Lee, doesn't it? You know, it just
don't
worries
do
me.
It.
Oh, I have to. This is what I've been meaning to tell you for about an hour now. I read on the grapevine, probably through Facebook again, but through a fan page, that there's a play coming out in London. It's on the West End because it had such rave reviews in Edinburgh, and it's called The Shark Is Broken. What's fantastic, of course, is that it's co-written by Robert Shaw's son, Ian Shaw, who acts in it, playing his dad.
Sure.
I tell you what, mate, have a look at Ian Shaw. He just is the fucking spit of his dad. And then there's these two other actors, one playing Dreyfus, the other playing Scheider. It's all about the three of them. It's all about their conversations in between takes because the fucking shark kept breaking down. And the tension that then built up between Dreyfus and Shaw.
Yeah.
With I think with Scheider being the kind of a mediator a lot of the time, although at times getting embroiled in it, there was a lot of tension, which also kind of created the greatness in the film, really. You know, it raises the film up several levels from this monster flick into it's really about characters and people, isn't it? That's what it's about. It's fascinating. It's such a great film as a consequence. I think everyone feels that nowadays. And it's had rave reviews.
Well, I hope it tours, or at least comes a bit nearer.
If it comes to Manchester, buddy, we're going.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going. Got to be done, hasn't it? I'd love to see that. But, of course, it's a big ask at the minute, go to London, isn't it? You know, it's probably easier and cheaper going to Spain than going to
Yeah.
Certainly cheaper.
Buying a programme. £15, please.
Yeah, no, that's what? Ridiculous, isn't it? I know.
If you still need programmes.
Yes. £250 for the night in the hotel.
Yeah. Premier Inn. That London.
That fucking London, mate.
This is Alpha 34 at Yankee Mike, Channel 1, 154-625. This channel is closing down today. Friday, the 3rd of March 2006, for the very last time. This is Alpha 34 at Yankee Mike on Channel 1, closing down.